We now begin Maseches Makos. This is Perek Aleph, Mishnah Aleph, 1-1, and we are turning to the topic of Edim Zomemin. So Edim Zomemin means conspiring witnesses. The word Zomem, something like a conspiracy, meaning they're colluding, they're joining forces to tell some untruth. And although usually, if we'd have witnesses who would say, let's say you have two witnesses, we'll call them Ernie and Bert. Okay, so if Ernie and Bert are witnesses, testify that the accused person, we'll call him Reuven, you know, did something bad, we would believe Ernie and Bert if their testimony stood up in Beis Din to the Drishna Chakir and so on. If, however, two other witnesses come, we'll call them Batman and Robin. So Batman and Robin show up and they give different testimony that contradicts the testimony of the first pair, Ernie and Bert, so then the Beis Din will say, listen, we have established halachic facts that are contradictory. We don't disbelieve Ernie and Bert. We don't disbelieve Batman and Robin, and therefore we're stuck. What do we do? Essentially, just, you know, the Beis Din will walk away because it's a stalemate. An exception to that rule, and it's a big chiddush, but it's a gezeiras hakasav based on the psukim. If the first witnesses testify regarding Reuven, that's Ernie and Bert, they testify, and then two other witnesses come and they don't say anything about Reuven. They say, we don't know, we don't care about Reuven. That's not our point. Our point is, Ernie and Bert are lying. Because in the process of Chakira, when you, Beis Din, were trying to clarify where Ernie and Bert was, and they said, oh, you know, we were at the shopping mall on Monday when we saw Reuven do that thing. So we don't know anything about Reuven. All we know is that that same time Monday, Ernie and Bert were with us, say Batman and Robin. Ernie and Bert were with us. They weren't at the shopping mall. They were with us in Tahiti. So they couldn't know anything about what happened in the shopping mall, and therefore they're obviously lying. So if that happens, although we again have contradictory evidence, right? It's two witnesses who say they were at the shopping mall and two witnesses say they weren't at the shopping mall. The gezeiras hakasav of the pasuk is we believe the second set who are testifying about the first set. So we'll believe Batman and Robin to confirm that Ernie and Bert are liars, okay? We'll discuss more about that in the Mishnayos themselves and the lamdas of why that might be the case. But in any case, that is the din here. So when that happens, so the in scenario that I gave, so Ernie and Bert are called the Edim Zomemin, the conspiring witnesses who lied about being able to give testimony regarding the accused Reuven because they weren't there at the place at the given time that they had to be. That's the point. Okay, and that was the purpose of Chakira, if you remember back to Sanhedrin. We were trying to make them establish exactly the time and place that they're testifying about so that they could be subject and potentially huzam, shown to be conspiring witnesses. Batman and Robin are the mazimin. They are the ones who are causing Ernie and Bert to become Edim Zomemin. Okay, so the basic principle is that when you have established that a group of witnesses, in our case, Ernie and Bert, are Edim Zomemin. So then the pasuk says, Va'asisem lo, you'll do to him, but actually it's really them. The Torah, whenever it talks about pairs of witnesses, refers to them in the singular. So Va'asisem lo means you'll do really to him, meaning the pair of witnesses. And indeed, you have to confirm that they're both Edim Zomemin to convict them as Edim Zomemin. Va'asisem lo, you'll do to them, Ka'asher zamam la'asos la'achiv, according to what they conspired to do to their brother. So if we would have believed Ernie and Bert, if the consequences to Reuven would have been that Reuven would have gotten Malchus, now Ernie and Bert get Malchus. If it would have been that Reuven would have gotten Misa, now Ernie and Bert get Misa. If it would have been that Reuven would have gotten, have to pay a penalty of $100, now it's Ernie and Bert who have to pay the $100. That's the idea of Vasisim lo kasher zamam lasos lachiv. You do to them what they conspired to do. Okay? Or in shorthand, it's called kasher zamam, as they conspired. Okay. So that becomes a topic of our perek here. But we start out with exceptions to this rule. And the reason we're doing that is because if you recall really in the end of the previous mishnah, I mean the last mishnah of the 11th perek of Maseches Sanhedrin, we had the situation where there were two Edim Zomemin who were lying about a couple where she was a Bas Kohen, and we said that the penalty for the Bas Kohen who is adulterous is Sreifa, whereas the penalty for Boala, the one who sleeps with her, is Chenek. And although usually an adulterous couple get the same punishment, that's an exception to the rules. The question would be, if these two guys, you know, Ernie and Bert, were lying about this couple, would we give them, we can't give them both chenek and sreifa, so what do we do? So based on psukim there, we said we give them chenek, but the point is that's an exception to the rule where they were conspiring to give the woman sreifa, but they don't get sreifa. So following up on that line of exceptions, our mission here points out to a couple other exceptions, and this is not a complete list, there could be others as well, but here we're talking about the case first of all, of a ben grusha or ben chalutza. And the story is like this. If you have a kohen, so a kohen is not allowed to marry a divorcee, a grusha. Pasuk says, ve'isha grusha me'isha lo yikachu. They cannot take, the kohen can't take a divorced woman as his wife. And the rabbis extended that not just to grusha, a divorcee, but also a chalutza, a woman who underwent the chalitza process. If you remember, like her husband died without any offspring. So she's has this zika, loosely speaking, like she's sort of like connected to, like sort of like a engagement or marriage, whatever you call it, to her brother-in-law. And if the brother-in-law doesn't marry her, instead of doing yibum, marrying her, he does chalitza and like severs that zika, severs that connection. It's kind of like he's divorcing her, sort of. And the rabbi said it looks like divorce enough to make it, to treat her like a divorcee. So the chalutza, who's only rabbinically like a divorcee, has the same din as the grusha, kind of throughout kol Torah kula. Now, the din is that if a kohen would marry a grusha, so then their offspring are called chalalim. They basically, even though their father is a kohen, they themselves are not kohanim. That chalal means like emptied out. The sanctity of the kohen has been emptied out of them, which means, this is kind of interesting, the kohen who marries the divorcee, so he himself can function as a kohen, and if he does tshuva, so fine, he can stick around and be a kohen once again and serve in the base of English and eat trum and the like. However, any children from that marriage will forever be invalidated as kohanim. They can't eat truma, they can't participate in the base of English, there's no tshuva to be done, they just simply are chalalim, they're emptied out of their kohanic sanctity. So the punishment really kind of devolves onto the children and to their offspring forever. So, in our Mishnah here, the problem is that if you would say, turn around and accuse the Ernie and Bert, the Adam Zoman, of lying about this person, Reuven, they're claiming that Reuven's mother was a divorcee, meaning they claim they were there when Reuven's mother got divorced, they saw her get her get, and now they know that after that, Reuven was born from a marriage between his mother, who's a divorcee, that's what they testify about, and Reuven's father, the Cohen. So they would be attempting to make not Reuven be a halal, but Reuven's offspring being halal. So the reciprocal act of Kasher Zaman would be, in theory, that the Edom Zomim now, their children should be halalim. You don't want the fact that maybe they're not even Kohanim in the first place, but even if they were Kohanim, so who would be getting the punishment, really, of treating the offspring as halalim? It would be the children of Ernie and Bert. And the Pasuk says, Vasisim lo, you'll do to him, the Eid Zomem, Ernie and Bert, not their children. So because you don't punish the children, you punish them, it's not possible to give them the kasher zamam, like the sort of reciprocal boomerang punishment back at them, what they were trying to do. And since we can't make Ernie and Bert now to be like B'nai Gerusha and B'nai Chalutza, instead, we'll just give them malchus, we'll give them lashes. How do we know that? It's based on a drush from a pasuk. The basic idea, and we'll explore this more in the next mission actually, it's a drush. You know, I'll walk through the drush quickly here. So the idea is, there's a parsh in the Torah, it says, Kiya riv ben anashim, if you have a dispute amongst men, v'nigshu el hamishpat ushvatum, and they approach the judges, the courts to get judged, v'hitztiku es ha-tzadik, v'hirshu es ha-rasha, and they, hitztiku, they vindicate the righteous one, v'hirshu es ha-rasha, and they impugn the wicked person. V'haya im bin hakos harasha, if that wicked one is someone who would be a subject to malchus, to lashes, then v'pilu hashofet v'hikau lefanav, then indeed the judges will lash him. So the drush is like this. Under normal circumstances, when you have a riv, a dispute between two people, it's not something that's subject to lashes. Usually it's a monetary dispute about who owes who money, and it'd be weird normally for Reuven to sue Shimon, and the consequences be that Shimon's getting lashes. That's not how it works. So therefore, the drasha here is that we're talking about a different situation. The situation is where Reuven and Shimon are fighting about something, whatever it is, and then in comes Ernie and Bert, and they start telling lies, and then later on they're shown to be Adam Zoman. In that kind of scenario, so what happens is, originally they were saying, like, you know, Reuven, they're accusing Reuven of being a bad guy, and now it turns out that we're going to save Reuven from being a bad guy, and instead we're going to say that Ernie and Bert are the bad guys. So says the reading of the psukim there. Once you have the dispute, the nigshu ela mishpat ushvatum. So says the psukim, v'tziku es tzadik. So you now exonerate, you vindicate, you show that the tzaddik, that the accused Reuven actually is innocent. He's a good guy. So you make him hitztiku, you make him a tzaddik again. Virshu es harasha. And as for Ernie and Bert, the bad guys, you now label them as Rashaim. You show them they were walked in the Bezdin just as testimony, giving witnesses, giving testimony, but it turned out to be bad guys. And then it says, Vahaya im bin hakosa rasha. If it's applicable to give them malchus, then you'll give them malchus. You'll lash them. So that is the source to tell you that there's such a thing as giving malchus to the Edom Zoman. So it's not always the case, but it is a possibility that he'll get malchus. So that being the case here, since we can't give our Edom Zoman the punishment of being b'nei grusha and b'nei chalutza, it's not possible because the pasuk says vasisim lo, do it to him and not to his children. You're stuck with plan B, which is he's a bin hakos, he's subject to lashes, and therefore he will get lashed instead. That's the story of the first part of the mission here. Let me say it all now inside. It says, Ketzat ha'edim nasin zomin, which literally would translate, you know, word for word, as how do the witnesses become edim zomin. But that really would be the topic of the Mishnah, like the fourth Mishnah of the Perek, Mishnah Dalid, how it happens, the rules of the you know, how it plays out in court. Here we're talking about what do we do if we actually can't make the edim zomin, meaning that some sort of we can't do the kasher zamam principle. So, for example, says the Mishnah, Me'idinanu be'ish ploni shehu ben grusha, o ben chalutza. These two guys, Ernie and Bert, lie, and they say that Reuven is a ben grusha. They saw his mother get divorced. That's what they testify about. They were in such a time. They were in the Bezdin, you know, January 1st, 1999, in the Bezdin there in Muncie, and they saw her get divorced. O ben chalutza, or they were in the Bezdin January 1st, 1999, in Muncie, and they saw her go through the chalitza process. So now she's not allowed to marry a Cohen. Yet she married Reuven's father, who is a Cohen, so they're claiming that Reuven is not really a legitimate Cohen. He's a halal. So now swoops in Batman and Robin, and they say, no, no, no. On January 1st, 1999, you were in Muncie. You were with us in Tahiti. Therefore, you couldn't know about that divorce. Therefore, you guys are liars. So now we've got Ernie and Bert becoming Adam Zoman. So since we can't make them like I said before, we can't make them to be a ben chalutza ben grusha, says the Mishnah. Ein omrim ya'ase ze ben grusha ben chalutza tachtav. Since we can't make them have the status of a ben grusha or chalutza, ella, the alternative plan is loke arbayim. We lash them literally 40 times. This is just a reference to makos from the Torah, and makos from the Torah always actually is at most 39 lashes at the hand of the bezin. Why the kolayim 40? We can discuss that in the third parak of the Masechta. But anyways, loke arbayim is just a shorthand for deraisa lashes, and you actually get a maximum of 39. So that's case one of the Mishnah. Just so you should know, again, that's not the only case. The din would be exactly the same if, let's say, for example, you know, Ernie and Bert were claiming that Reuven was a mamzer. Okay? No kohanim involved. Again, the same idea. Since we're not going to make Ernie and Bert mamzerim, ruining their children's lives, therefore, instead of making them mamzerim, we'll give them malchus. Okay? That's part one of the Mishnah. Part two of the Mishnah is another exception. If it says, if Ernie and Bert, they zom and say, me'idin anu be'ish ploni shehu chayv liglos. They say, listen, Reuven has to go into galus. Why? They're claiming Reuven is an accidental murderer. He killed Beshogeg. And the consequences, as we'll see in the next parak, is that someone kills Beshogeg inadvertently, if there was some level of negligence here, so then he ends up going into Gullus, potentially. So since they were lying, they should go into Gullus instead, fulfilling the idea of Kasher Zamam, like they conspired to do. The problem is, the Pasuk says, in regards to the person who's going to the Ir HaMiklat, the city of refuge, as an accidental murderer, the pasuk says, "Hu yanus el achas ha'arim." He will flee to one of those cities. So the drasha is, it's he who does the fleeing and not other people like Edom Zomin. Because of that drasha, we can't make Ernie and Bert, Edom Zomin, now go into Galus. Instead, what we do, Ela Loka Arbayim, we give them Malchus instead. Okay. Now, the Mishnah's not done. The Mishnah goes on now, really, and we have a new Mishnah in the Bavli. It breaks it up. But the new Mishnah here has a new topic, and it's the same kind of idea. We've got essentially Edom Zomin. They're giving us a testimony where we don't exactly know what punishment we should give them. So the case is, again, unusual. You have Ernie and Bert claiming that Reuven divorced his wife. Now, Reuven's denying that he divorced his wife. So therefore, implicit in that denial, of course, is he didn't pay her ksuba. If we would listen to Ernie and Bert, and we'd believe them, so now Reuven would have to pay his wife out her ksuba. Okay? So Reuven would pay his wife 200 zuz. So since we're not going to listen to Ernie and Bert because Batman and Robin showed they were Edom Zomin, so you would think the thing to do is simply do kasher zamam. They were trying to make Reuven lose 200 zuz, so now they should have to pay Reuven 200 zuz. That makes sense. The problem is that Reuven wasn't going to necessarily lose a full 200 zuz because he might have paid out his ksuba anyways. Okay? How could that be? So let's just oversimplify ksuba. Of course, you pick ksuba one of two possibilities, which is either death or divorce. But remember, if Reuven's wife dies before him, if she predeceases him, so then there'll never be a ksuba payout. He'll keep it all. So it's like a maybe payout. It's a potential payout. So you can think of like, it's kind of like stock options, right? It maybe will pay out, or insurance policy. Think of it as an insurance policy. So just and forget, just think of the death part of it. So essentially, you could think of it, to oversimplify it, as Reuven's wife has an insurance policy on Reuven's life. And if Reuven dies in her lifetime, she'll get a payout. And if he doesn't, then she won't. So even if the payout of the insurance policy is $1 million, no one's going to, if someone else could buy her policy off her, no one would pay her $1 million because maybe he'll die and maybe he won't. Maybe he'll die before her, maybe he'll die after her, I should say. Everyone dies eventually, but the point is he won't die first, so there'll be no payout. So it's worth less than the full million, but it's worth more than zero. So the same thing over here, right? Reuven may or may not have had to pay his wife out in the end. So when the Edom Zomin came and was trying to make him pay the 200 zuz now, that wasn't causing him a full 200 zuz loss. It was really causing him a loss less than 200 zuz. So how much should the Edom Zomin have to pay? The answer is they should have to pay him the amount of loss they were going to attempt. They were attempting to cause him to lose. Kajir Zamam. What would that be? So the idea is, says the Mishnah, you basically figure out what a normal person, like an independent third party, some, you know, hedge fund, some speculator, whatever it is out there, would pay for this ksuba, like this, you know, this debt instrument, you know, like an insurance policy, that if Reuven would die before his wife, then it's going to pay out to them instead. How much do they pay for that policy? The policy is 200 zuz. How much do they pay? Obviously, the answer is more than zero, but less than 200. So that's the payment that we're talking about. That's the idea of the Mishnah. Let me read the words inside, then I'll add to that a little bit. It says the Mishnah inside, if Reuven and Shimon, excuse me, if Ernie and Bert say, Me'idin anu be'ish ploni, we testify about Reuven, she'gerash es ishto, Reuven divorced his wife, and therefore implicit is he has to pay her ksuba. V'lo nasan la ksubasa, and now the Mishnah speaks out that we know, the Bezdin knows that Reuven didn't pay out her ksuba. We know Bezdin knows that because Reuven's denying it. The point here is that there's no way really that Reuven and, that Ernie and Bert could possibly know if Reuven paid the ksuba because they weren't there every second of you know their lives together. But it doesn't matter. Since, as I explained before, since Reuven's denying that he divorced his wife, certainly he didn't pay her. So what do we do? V'halo, says the Mishnah, Bein hayom bein lamachar sofali ten la ksubasa. It really could be that maybe today, maybe tomorrow, at some point, if there's a real possibility, he would have had to pay the 200 zuz anyway. So it's not a full 200 zuz loss that he was going to be caused. So therefore, what do we do? Omdin, the Bezdin will assess the value of a third party. Kama adam roteli ten buksubasa shalzu. How much would a third party speculator be prepared to pay for this woman's ksuba, Reuven's wife's ksuba, that they would get the payment in the event that Reuven died first or divorced her? Shim this almana onas garsha, if she would get widowed or divorced. V'imesa yershin abala. On the flip side, of course, if she would die first, then there would be no payout, because instead Reuven would just keep the money for himself. So basically do that calculation, and that's the payment. That's the idea here, and that's how the bartender learns. Rashi brings up a point, like sort of a mathematical point, which is, wait a second, the numbers don't add up exactly right. Let me just explain. Let's say, for example, Reuven, with his 200 zuz ksuba, is on his deathbed. He's got, you know, fourth stage pancreatic cancer, and the doctors say he has a week to live. And now the Edom Zomen come and say, you have to pay your wife the 200 zuz, because you divorced her and you give her the ksuba. So how much were they going to cause him to lose? So let's just say that a speculator, knowing that Reuven's on his deathbed, would pay 190 zuz to get this, you know, the insurance policy, because in a week time or so, they'll get a 200 zuz payout. So it's worth it for them, right? So if a third party would pay 190 zuz for this instrument, so how much should Reuven be getting? Reuven was getting caused a very relatively small loss, because he was going to pay the 200 zuz very soon anyways from his estate. Therefore, what should happen, one pshat in Rashi is, and this is the simplest one to understand, I think, is that you take the 200 zuz payout and you subtract from it the amount that Reuven was going to pay. You subtract 190, and the difference of 10, that was the economic value, the present value of the loss that these guys were going to cause Reuven, and that, the 10 zuz, that's what they'd pay to Reuven as punishment for kasher zamam. Okay, fine. The last part of the Mishnah, which also has a separate Mishnah in the Bavli. So it's the following case. Okay, again, I'm saying the also outside one more time. The case is like this. Reuven and Shimon lie about, Ernie and Bert lie about Reuven owing money to Shimon. Okay? Now, the case is they're saying that Reuven owes the money, and the money back is due in 30 days. Turns out they were lying, and the truth is the money wasn't due back in 30 days, it was due back in 10 years. But no one's disputing the fact that the loan, the $1,000 loan, was for $1,000. It's just a question of, is $1,000 due from Reuven to Shimon in 30 days or in 10 years? So again, the payment would have been certain. The difference is, how much loss were these guys going to cause Reuven? So the answer is, they're going to cause him the loss that a person would be willing to pay to keep money for 10 years, $1,000 for 10 years, instead of paying it back after 30 days. And even though the Torah doesn't allow for ribis, you're not allowed to charge people for like waiting to get repaid money, that's true, but it doesn't mean there's not a value. If you could get a loan from a non-Jewish bank or something, for sure, you'd much rather have money for 10 years than for 30 days, and you'd pay for that. So the difference, what a regular third party, you know, would pay for that difference, that is the amount of loss that the Edom Zomen attempted to cause to Reuven, so that's what they'd have to pay Reuven instead as punishment. Inside the Mishnah says, new case, Me'idin anu be'ish ploni shu chayev l'chaveru elav zuz. We testify, this is what Ernie and Bert say, that Reuven owes Shimon 1,000 zuz. Al menas litnan lo mekan vad shloshim yom. And the condition was that Reuven had to pay back Shimon in 30 days. V'hu omer, but Reuven denies that. He says, mekan vad eser shanim. He says, yes, it was 1,000 zuz that I owe, but I had 10 years payback, not just 30 days. So says the Mishnah, Om din kama adam rota liten viyu biyado elef zuz. How much would a person be prepared to pay for the right to have 1,000 zuz in his pockets? Be nosen mekan va'ad shloshim yom. Be nosen mekan va'ad eser yishanim. How much is the difference between a person, how much would he pay extra to be able to keep that 1,000 zuz for 10 years as opposed to 30 days? And that differential, that was the attempted loss that Ernie and Bert tried to cause Reuven. So that's the amount they would have to pay to fulfill kasher zamam, to punish them for their conspiring to try to make Reuven to have this loss.